Talofa, Bula, Malo. Welcome to Pacific Rugby Players Radio. All things Pacific Rugby, all things about us. A place where we take time to talk the big and small issues, share stories and have a few laughs with current and past Pacific Rugby players around the world. So whether on the team bus, driving home from training or on the physio table, sit back, chill and dig down deep on the issues that affect us. Pacific Rugby Players. Here's your host for today.
Bolovanake everybody, welcome to another PRP podcast today. My name is Aidan Clark and I'm here with our Pacific Rugby Players team to bring to you another educational workshop and podcast, this time focusing on entrepreneurship. In particular, we have a repeat guest coming back in Salilo Martins, who amazed us so much when he taught us about his off-the-field success with bars and nightclubs and also gyms that we've asked him to come back. And today he's been joined as a co-guest with former All Black, proud Samoan and very successful rugby player through all of Europe and Casey Lolala. Casey has had great success off the field with his restaurant that people may have seen in Paris and also his coffee brand. So I'm really excited for this masterclass to drill down and to talk to them a bit more about the nitty-gritty of business. This episode is really for those players, and anybody really, who may just have that little flame inside them that are thinking about starting a bar or a cafe or a restaurant and want to hear more about how to do it, and also to use your transferable skills from rugby or to balance your time through rugby and to give it a crack. These two gentlemen have plenty of advice and experience to pass on, so it's going to be a good one. Sit back, take your notes, get in touch with us if there's anything further you want to drill down on. Otherwise, enjoy. Let's get stuck into the podcast.
Morning up from here in New Zealand and everybody in the evening in the north. Welcome back to another Pacific Rugby Players workshop. These have been really popular. It's fantastic to bring another one. And tonight we have our masterclass. And this is by popular demand. I got lots of messages after our first, I'd call entrepreneurial session with Salilo, as we've managed to get him back along with Casey Lolala to do a masterclass on hospitality. So all things bar, cafe, nightclub, coffee, all those sorts of things. Today, what we're going to try and focus on so that we get to the good juice as quick as we can will be getting into the business chat and tapping into the minds and the lessons and the challenges that these two men have been through, and making sure that we take your guys' questions as well. A little bit of housekeeping. We've got our PRP team sitting in on here. We've got Gaylene Jr. and Marion from around the world, firstly letting people in from the waiting room, but also monitoring some chat. Send your questions into myself or us on the group chat, and we'll try and make sure we get those answered off. But without further ado, Salilo, Casey, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Awesome. I'm going to go.
Hello, everyone.
Going to go straight into it. I will introduce a little bit more about Casey. Well, I don't think he really probably needs it. Everybody knows exactly what Casey's been up to. So last week we had Salilo, former Kalatahi, been in Wales a long time, legend of the game up there, and has now branched off into different entrepreneurial ventures and his gym fit-out company and in hospitality. We have Casey, who's Counties, Canterbury, Crusaders, All Blacks, before then plying his trade in Cardiff and then also across in France, now moving into the coaching game and really making waves in his hospitality businesses as well. And to start off, Lilo, how's your week and what's your feedback from your first session that you had with us last week?
Yeah, week's been pretty cool. Thanks for having me first off. I'm based in Swansea, man, in the UK, and like I say, I think we're maybe a week ahead of New Zealand at the moment of this whole crisis thing. We've just been told, I think we've got another 3 weeks now of lockdown. So As I was joking with the boys, I think we've got over the whole the mindset now of being at home with the wife and the kids. So, you know, I think the brain's already adapted to it now. But no, the last week's been pretty cool, man. I guess just I think I don't know. For me, it's been pretty good because a lot of times when we're busy, right? I've had no time for admin or even to sit down and really go over invoicing and all that kind of stuff. So, bro, this has been amazing because I can actually dig up stuff that I haven't really been in touch. And now I've got folders that are organized from A to B, man, you know, and it's time now where I can use kind of well. But yeah, that's been me, bro. Thank you.
Thank you. And Case, welcome, brother. How's isolation treating you in France?
Hey, everyone, thanks for having me. You know, it's in Paris, obviously, just a little bit out of Paris. So it's nice to have a garden and obviously next to the forest. Can't imagine being in Paris when those apartments. So, it's been, I've been away for the last 8 months coaching in Toulon. So now I'm back in Paris. So it's been really nice to be back and spend time with the kids and obviously my wife. At the moment, it's just, you know, chilling out and doing the admin stuff. And as I said before, that having a good manager working in the restaurant, it's been really good. So we'll be able to communicate and just being on top of things and make sure that we got everything covered. But other than that, it is what it is. You just have to accept and just pick out the things that you can control and obviously the things that you can't control. And then, and you can see yourself moving forward if you keep analysing that every day.
Yeah, awesome, man. We might chase that and dive straight into the business stuff. No doubt we might have some questions later, a little bit more about transition, but to focus on what we're here for. Case, can you tell us a bit more about your business ventures, restaurant, coffee brand, where are these located and what do they do?
So my last year of playing, I always had this dream of doing a coffee shop, because when I came here, I just found that there was a lack of coffee shop around Paris, you know, the ones that we used to back in New Zealand. So the whole goal was to bring that same experience here in Paris. So I went around, and one of the chefs that I knew, I went and asked him if I could, you know, if he could make a simple menu for my cafe. He said, well, I'll come in with you and do the cafe with you. So long story short, within 2 weeks, we biked around all around Paris looking for 2-3 spots. And we found the perfect one. And all of a sudden, it just went from, even I didn't really believe that was going to happen. But obviously, having someone that was driven to get something going, that really pushed the process and obviously get it going. And obviously went to the bank, got the funding in, and a month later we were in the construction bit. So it's in the second, which is right in the middle of Paris, is the Bobo area. So there's a lot of young people, and it's always busy. And it went from it was a cafe first, and then it ended up changing the concept from a cafe to a restaurant because the chef was a really good chef, and I was coaching at that time, and then obviously he was always at the restaurant. And so he was trying to do a cafe, which wasn't really something that he believed in. A few months later, we ended up changing the concept and did what he changed into a restaurant.
Nice. So you pivoted a bit based on the skill set that you had. And I'm really interested more about the location. Lilo, you touched on the importance of location last week. Like, man, hugely courageous to jump on a bike, ride around and find a spot. What were the key things you were looking for, Case, in terms of your location?
Obviously the rent. Because if you can control that, it's a big... help in terms of running your business plan and then not having to fork out a lot for the rent. And we picked out a few areas in Paris that we wanted to look at that fitted our what we wanted. And the second was before it was a really rough area of Paris. But the last 10 years, obviously, it just changed the dramatically. The second is literally a cave from the Notre Dame, So it's very, very central. Obviously, if you know Paris, it's the one that's in the middle and it goes around in the snail form. So you 1, 2, 3 and it goes around like that. So the second is literally in the middle of Paris. And we found this this diamond, and fortunately the story was that the owner had cancer, so they wanted to get rid of it. So, you know, we came at the right time, we made an offer, and obviously they accepted it, and then that really helped us free up the money to, because we literally gutted everything and then started from scratch. So having to control those costs really helped us in the back end. Because Paris is, especially that area, the really old part of Paris, there has to be a lot of work because it's so, so old. And we didn't keep one thing of the place that was before us. So we literally gutted the whole thing out and started from scratch.
Nice. Lilo, to come to you on that subject now, a player online now thinking that they may want to start a cafe, bar, restaurant location. You touched a little bit on it last week. Tell me more about the importance of not so much choosing the right location, but considering what the rent cost is and the overheads, and even like Casey said, the fit out. What's a player looking out for there?
Yeah. Bro, I think Casey is bang on with mate riding his bike around the neighborhood, man. You know, I think we tend to forget, just be practical and realistic about things. So, you know, one, you got to know your area, right? So Casey knows Paris well. So him and his boy jumped on the bike and went around to all the cool places, and they sussed out where the best spot is, you know? But I think from my experience is I found when I try to go a little bit deeper and go off the beacon track a little bit, right, into an area maybe it wasn't as popular as other areas. Now, I've done it with two bars. Now, the bar that I got on a cheap rent, right, which was in an area where it wasn't too popular, I found that I was spending more money on marketing and everything else to try to get people down there than I was on really paying a little bit more rent on the main strip. So I think you got to be careful that, yeah, look, I've got a bargain. It's down in the back by the bins at the back there. Don't worry. People will come if I say my name. You know what I mean? Guys, you got to be a little bit – and don't get me wrong. Sometimes you get lucky because I'm John Olomu, right? He owns a bar down by the bins at the back there. He, you know, go down there, that's his bar, and people become – they just go there because of his name, maybe. You know? Probably Casey would probably do that as well. But I think for the normal Joe blogs, you gotta understand that, yes, try and get a location where you're paying maybe a little bit more, but not over the odds. You know, you get that bargain still, but you're not, mate, you're not spending half your time marketing and trying to spend money on people coming, yeah, we're around the corner, whatever, you know. So I think that's, you gotta get that important, guys. That's one thing I learned. If I turn back time, maybe instead of going for the bar that's around the corner, I could have looked a bit harder and tried to negotiate a bit more for that bar on the main strip, which is prime spot where you don't do as much marketing as you should, because people just fall into your bar. They know where it is. Oh yeah, bro, it's on the main strip next to the other ones, right? Yeah, that's there. So if it's a little bit of a tip, I think that's just answering your question, Aiden. I hope that helps.
No, it does, bro. And actually probably moves into what my next question is going to be about marketing. And what you guys have learned. But I just want to park that for a second and revisit it and go back to Casey. Bro, I don't think all the players online would forgive me if I didn't ask, where at what stage for you did you think that business was going to be for you and you're going to have a crack at it and not go and apply for a job somewhere, I don't know, a 9-to-5? And also why hospitality and cafes and coffee?
Yeah, for me, it kind of happened really, really late. I knew that I told myself I was going to leave rugby and go into something else after playing, but I never knew what it was. But I think my curiosity, you know, was something that I had. I was always curious about this and that. But one thing I did know was that there's something about, you know, serving people and giving them something good and see the smile on their faces And I always loved that. And that's why I love being in the restaurant and proud of the food that you serve to them and obviously the place that you have. And one thing you have to remember is that you have to be really, really passionate about it as well. And this is why I'm so passionate about serving someone and seeing the smile on their face and didn't even look at the bill at the end because they're so, you know, content with what they did, what you're giving them. And so that was a real driving force for me. And still everything I do now is just creating that experience for anyone that walks past that door. It's the same thing when you, like us as footy players, you know, when you go into games, you know, there's 100%, there's a lot of people there, they haven't seen you play. And you've got this opportunity, this one game to showcase what you can do. And that was my mentality when I was playing, was that, okay, they're going to come here and they got this opportunity to see it. They want to finish this game and they want to talk about you at the end of the game. It's the same thing, mentality, the mindset I have with the restaurant is that when somebody comes into my restaurant, that they leave and they always remember the plate that you put in front of them or the experience that you gave them when they came to your place.
Yeah, that's awesome. To carry on that chat, like for both of you, but firstly probably Casey, like Polynesians aren't naturally people who push themselves forward, and when it comes to marketing or taking a challenge like this on, it doesn't always come that easy. And we talked in other sessions about fear of failure, fear of what other people will do to judge you. Did you have any of that case early on when you thought I'm going to give this a go?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I still do, but you're met with so many challenges that, and you gain so much experience through the journey that if you're proactive in your approach, you're always going to be ahead. That you never leave anything to chance. So with the marketing, you kind of see things happening, the trend happening. So you always try and, you know, get it out there and test what works. Okay, this post I put on Instagram, you know, I didn't get much feedback from it. Okay, and that's how you know, those fears when everything is laid on the table and you fold up and lose everything because of the shame of putting yourself out there and make it work. Or you go get out there and then just get it done. And that's the only thing. It's just the fear of not trying. Or I think I got over that a long time ago. But yeah, if I don't go 100% at one thing, I'll know that I'll always think about that rather than just going 100% at it. If it doesn't work, at least you shut that door and you go to another direction. And so never, ever be afraid of... And the more you put yourself in those positions, the more you realize how short life is. It all comes down now because you want to maximize every opportunity that you have. And that's the beauty of going at something really, really full on and commit to it.
Yeah, nice. Anything to add there, Lilo?
Yeah, no, Casey, man, I totally agree with your passion, brother. And I think I'm a big believer of I'd rather live in failure than regret, you know. You don't want to be that old guy in the pub who talks about, I had this idea, never did it. I had the idea, but, you know, I'm gutted I never did it, you know. And but, I mean, yeah, for marketing, I think... You know, guys, in all honesty, I've, you know, through my career, and I think you guys are lying if you're like saying no, you've been into many bar, right? And you know exactly how the environment that you enjoy being in, right, is the environment that you can create in some way. So for me, as a mindset for, say, the restaurants maybe Casey's on about or the bars that I've been to that I really enjoyed, and I pick all the good things in my head that I know that the customer wants, you know, and I draw that into what I want to promote, and that's how the bar should be in some way. So it's not rocket science, but I think if you get those simple things right, I think at least you've got, you know, a good start, and you've got a good platform to work off at least, you know?
Yep. And you're quite right. If I don't even say it isn't rocket science, but it does become easier with experience of trying those different marketing initiatives. And Case, I know you're pretty proficient on Instagram and Facebook. What are a couple of hints for a player out there who is thinking, yeah, I want to start a business, but how will I promote it? How do I do that marketing? So where do you learn? Like, and how do you learn? Is it trial and error, or do you read a book? Or what do you think?
Well, first of all, you know, you have to know your strengths. And I know that my strengths is not the books, or my strengths is bringing something together, a team together, and be that, you know, that example for, and then you have the right people around you to guide you through those things. So for example, the restaurant, you know, obviously the chef is, he knows his food. The manager that I have, he's great with the books and he's great with how the French system works. So, and for me, I'm just there just to make sure to bring all those elements together to make it work. And now that I have those people in place, I've started to educate myself. So, like, for example, this is the last 2-3 weeks. I've taught myself how to work Adobe on just by watching YouTube. There's a lot of good stuff on YouTube that you can watch and educate yourself. That's the thing that, boys, you really need to, you know, we spend 2-4 hours on our phones just, you know, looking at other people's lives. But if you can take a moment, there's a lot of educational stuff on YouTube. I'm reading a book as well. It's called the Blue Ocean Strategy. You know, just things like that. You have to educate yourself, because, you know, I don't really want to go back to study. But I, you know, there's a lot of the internet, everything is available for us to educate ourselves. So to answer your question, having the right people around you. So that means having the right people on your bus and get them in the right seats, and then obviously. The main thing is to educate yourself and work on yourself.
It's awesome. Excellent. To move over a little bit towards the food and alcohol. Now, Case, I want you to probably answer this one first. You said to me before the session that you recently had some learnings around when it comes to profit margins, that how alcohol played a role compared to food. Tell us a bit more of that, and then I'm going to go to Lilo to talk about what he touched on last week around where all the margins are.
Yeah, with the food and that, the new manager came on board, and obviously we started talking, and I looked at his business plan that he was going to present to the bank. And he said, you know, we don't make much. The margin on the food is not that much, but the loss that we've made in the last 2 years, because obviously in the last year here in Paris was terrible because of all the strikes that we had. So, but he said, we are able to make up all this loss within half a year if we just push the alcohol, because the margins of the alcohol is just, you know, it's that much bigger than the food. And then he went on. But instead, he went on to talk about the people that works in the restaurant, that the people who just sells the alcohol. So that means, like, if you put a plate on someone, in front of someone, you said, oh, well, this wine goes well with that food. And if you manage to sell 3 or 4 bottles of that wine, again, you've it's a big win for not only for the restaurant and but also for the people. But obviously, anyone that drinks that much bottle of wine, that means they're enjoying their time. I just found out that alcohol is the main thing, guys. So The food is make great food, obviously, but if you can sell the alcohol, that's the key, especially here in Paris, here in France, because one employee, if I pay the one employee a thousand euros, it will cost nearly twice as that to the business. So that means you have to nearly another thousand to the government because of all the charges. So that's what kills the, it's really hard to, everything has to be really, really tight in the business plan in order because of, especially when it comes to employees, you have to pay exactly the same. So I pay you a thousand, I have to pay the government a thousand because of all the benefits that comes with it.
You know, before I get you to answer that too, what I'm hearing there is, although in a restaurant or a bar, it seems really warm and fluffy and loose, there's actually really tight systems and really good knowledge of exactly what's causing the profit and sitting in behind. Would you agree, Salido?
100%, man. If you want to obviously make an honest living and work hard for every penny, then you gotta treat it like that, you know. Stop being the first guy to the bar, you know what I mean, like you were in the old days where you're just wasting money, you know, on anything really, where you have to look at small margins. 1% is 1%, man. You know, if someone said to you, I'll give you 49% of the business instead of 50, you'll go, no, it's 1%. It means a lot, you know? So I think, to jump on that case, look, we one of the bars, Bookshop Bar, we did a lot of food at the start off, and we found that, look, we were wasting our time and so on. Alcohol was always been our game. You know, it's always been led by alcohol. Cocktails, we call ourselves a cocktail bar. You know, we don't call ourselves a pub or a bar. We say, look, we're a cocktail bar. It sounds flasher because we get more females there, I'll be honest, you know. And when the females turn up, the males turn up, you know. But we found, and this is talking about the food, we found that we had to have some type of food, right? Because earlier on in the day, if you want people in early in your bar, they're not going to come and just sit there and drink straight away, are they? So we've got to have some type of element of food, where be it sharing boards or some type of cool little food, which are quickly made. They're made real fast, but, you know, it fills the tummy a little bit. So then you can start actually getting on the session, you know. So we actually try and get people in an earlier time, from, say, 7 to 9. Our focus is on parties. I'll be honest, I think we've got it on the list here to talk about later on how we can utilize other areas of the business. Well, we try and get bookings in quite early. So they come in a group of 30. They've got an area upstairs they can go to. We've got finger foods up there. But we know for a fact we're just trying to give them a little bit of food and then get them straight on the drink. And then, you know, then from, say, 9 o'clock or 8:30, when the DJ hops on, they're tipsy and they're, you know, every payment at the bar, literally, they're not even looking at the price. You know what I mean? They're just tapping their card and they're just enjoying themselves till 12 o'clock, you know, and then they move on to the clubs. So look, we've always been drink led. So in some way, our margins, 75% to 80% markups on most of our, explained before about a bottle of beer. You know, it is kind of that simple. You know, you buy it off your wholesaler, you know, at £1.20, and you're selling it at £4. Here's your margin for popping a cap. And I guess it's not just popping the cap, but also, look, we're quite a cool bar. So it's the way you present it. It's the way it's, you know, if a glass is put next to it with all the garnishing and everything else. So that's the difference between, say, a pub down the road at the RSA, what you guys call it, or a real classy place where, you know, you try and make it kind of unique and cool. That's my side of it.
Yeah, nice. And just to chase that a little bit, but then to move to coffee, Casey. So similar, I think, would it be fair that, and again, it's around the marketing and getting the right people in, but I know you do some amazing things online and on social media around the coffee. When you're pouring that cup, do you know exactly how much it costs you in terms of how much you put and then selling and what profit you make from it?
All I know is that cost about 50 cents to a euro, and then you sell it for 4.55. So the margins is obviously is quite big there, but you have to make a lot of flat whites during the day to really work, you know, a really good coffee shop. What I've concentrated on is the online business, you know, having subscribers. So the company that's roasting my beans in London, which delivers all around the UK, is called Pact. They have close to 40,000 subscribers a month. Wow. If you do the math on that, it's pretty crazy. So every month, so probably say the 30,000 they get. One day it was 2 weeks ago, I called up and because she didn't put my orders out, and she was saying, sorry, I'm running late because I had to send out 6,000 orders today. So this is why, and obviously to fuel this online business with the coffee, because of the confinement or the lock-in that we have now. So people are staying at home. So now the incentive is to order these things in. So I'm, whatever I do in terms of the coffee shop, that is just to for the people to come in and taste the coffee if they like it. And the goal will be like, okay, this week I'm going to try and sell 5 subscriptions. So if I can get 5 subscriptions this week, it's a win for me. Regardless of how much, obviously I have to cover my rents, my costs and stuff like that. But in terms of the real win for me is when I don't have to have people in seats there, but they come and just take it away or order online or subscribe online. And so that's the niche for me. And so my business plan is, hopefully, you know, it's a marathon, you know, still early stages. Is that at the moment, the roaster in London is going to be the one covering the whole of the UK. Whatever orders that comes from my site, that's from the UK, it goes automatically to the roaster there. I'm going to roast my own beans in France. So whatever order from France, it goes straight to that roaster and it goes to, so that you can, you know, have that online, like Amazon, you know, they are crazy about the customer experience. And so that's something that I'm trying to take on board and use it on my coffee business. But in terms of the coffee shop itself, I definitely love it because obviously I love giving the cup of coffee and seeing the face, but that is just to fuel the online business. And so that's just the nice. that's just the goal it is right now, and see yeah. where it takes it.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, it's about, you know, that reoccurring income. If you can create it through subscriptions, it's the same as a loyal customer who turns up every day, either for a coffee or a beer, and then you can forecast on that. Anything to add, Lilo?
No, it's bang on. And I think we got loyal customers as well that come, and, you know, it's just that little touch of knowing their names, you know what I mean? How they like their coffee, they're like a biscuit next to it, and you know what I mean? And just taking that time out of your day to having a conversation with that regular customer, be it online or offline, you know, they're coming in. I think that nice touch always goes a long way.
Yeah, fantastic.
Just to add on that, how many of us go to, when we are playing and we go to bars and the manager or the owner comes in and just puts a round of shots to us? There's always that one or two person that gets so excited and say, oh yeah, I'll have 2 bottles of Grey Goose straight away. Cost 200 euros or 200 quid a pop. You know, this is the experience. And by just giving that little one shot each, which costs, you know, absolutely nothing. If you have a group of 15 guys in there and you have 5 of them ordering magnums of Grey Goose, it's, you know, and I'm guilty of that, you know what I mean? I'm one of those guys.
Everyone is, bro. It's the Falangis that don't buy it, bro. It's the
man that's sitting there going, yes,
these stupid coconuts buying out the Grey Goose, man. They don't know what they're doing.
Everybody's probably cracking up online. I can see everybody.
And it's funny because It's funny. You always point to the top, to the top shelf. You never go the middle shelf or the lower shelf. You always go, yeah, you know, always to the top shelf.
Yeah, but you're right. You get a couple in you, you're away, big night, get that card out, tap, tap, and Lilo's behind the bar just going like this, going, oh, yes, you're away. Gotcha, gotcha.
Got him.
Look, this is gold. We're getting some good gold here. What we're covering off, we've talked about location. We're starting to talk about profit margins. We're talking about customer service and the importance of that. So we've got some players sitting there just thinking, oh, yeah, okay. There's a gap missing. And I know this because I've been through it as well, is the fit out, okay? And the design and the feeling of your cafe, restaurant, or your bar, nightclub. Man, we're all tight ears. We don't like paying for anything. And there's a temptation when doing the fit out to go for as cheap as you can. Or sometimes at the other end of the spectrum, you might go too deep and spend too much and it takes too long to recoup that money. Any advice there? I might start with you, Lilo. Like when you're doing your bars, when it comes to fit out, what type of furnishings? Does the glass matter? Does the cup matter?
Yeah, bro. I think 100% it matters, eh? And you're bang on. I think you touched on it last time by getting yourself a bit dirty and having a go yourself, you know. Now, I was fortunate that, say, my first bar club, it's called Flickering Light, and we went down the whole vintage upcycle theme, you know what I mean? Coop's, funny enough, he came to Swansea as our guest DJ once, this is Cooper Vuna, and our bar is this old truck, like an old school truck, right? So the head of the truck is the front, and then the back trailer is the bar, so you serve off the back trailer, and then the cab at the front is where the DJ booth is, right? So the decks are in the DJ booths and he's got to wind the window down and he's playing inside in the truck. Mm-hmm. So, and the dance floor is right in front of it. So, you know, and again, I think Case touched on it before. That's my point of difference. People talk about it. It's like, oh, there's a truck, bro. The DJ's in the front cab. He's mm-hmm. the man, you know? And we built that because we had an idea in slate. We went, right, we're going to go to vintage. We're going to go old upcycle. We're going to turn crazy lamps, cupboards upside down and all that kind of quirkiness. Now, I knew in my town, Swansea, there wasn't anything like that. So I knew I wasn't copying anyone. I wasn't going to be like, oh, I've seen it before. You know, I kind of knew my area. So I knew if I built this, I knew there's a niche market of people who would come just to be involved in this kind of cool environment, you know? And again, to touch more on your question was, yeah, bro, we got the tools out, you know. I think it took us about 3 months, man, and wasn't being paid. I was a director. My time was spent building it. And the beauty about it was I built it the way I wanted it, you know. Don't get me wrong, bro. I was kind of useless, but I had my builders next to me. But I was like, bro, you know, you want it like this, you know. And in the end, it was cool. And things were just... things were different, and I think our crowd came because we had Cooper on the decks, right? It was R&B. It is all R&B. That was our point of difference. And I learned that from back in my clubbing days down in Auckland, you know, Club Polly's and all that. But
someplace else.
But someplace else, bro. You're gonna get me started on that. But I think that's again to this day. This is our fifth year open, and I think we're busier now than when we were in our second, maybe first or second year, because of the theme itself, and so on. So, yeah, mate, get down, save costs, you know, as much as you can. If it's some painting that you know you can do, get in there and paint, bro. You know, get in there and save as much as you can because it'll all pay off in the back end.
Yeah, nice. And Case, for you guys to fit out, how important is it? I've been lucky enough to come to your restaurant a couple of times. Everything, amazing food. It's presented amazingly. Beautiful cutlery. Are those areas that you don't cut corners?
Yeah, I think for me, it was having that vision of what I want to do. First of all, the behavior of people in Paris and obviously in France is that they go there and I think just everyone else, but more so in Paris, you know, they love to sit there and enjoy themselves. So we looked at the flow of the place so that it doesn't, you know, one customer comes here and then they have to try and, you know, weave their way to the to order their food, or vice versa with the waiters and stuff like that. And then we went for the high tables because we don't want to make the tables too comfortable, because we want to turn the tables, because we know that we only have 35 covers in the restaurant. So in order for us to make money, we need to turn the tables. So hence we went for the high tables with the wooden seats to try and you know, people eat their food and they get up. And obviously try and that was the idea. But then you have the idea, but like Lilo was saying, it's also having the builders and the architect to really bring those things together. Because as you want, as the owner, you want, so many times that us as customers, when we go into restaurants or cafes, it's just missing something. There's no soul to it. And so I think that's where you come in and you bring that element of bringing all the elements of what you want and how you saw the place into one thing. And so everything is very important. Obviously the fit out of the place, the flow. If you have 200 seats, you can make the seats comfortable, but we only have 35. So we went for the high seating and the wooden, in the wooden seats to try and turn the tables.
Nice. Yeah, like those little things make a difference and are reasons why people come back. I'm just going to touch on something else around your own personal development. In the meantime, while I ask this question, I encourage everybody to throw in some questions either to myself or on the chat on the line, because we want to make sure that we're getting all the gold that you want to know. But while you're doing that, I want to ask around your own personal development now, and also the mentors and the business people that you associate with. I'm a big fan, and I know of the saying, you are the average of the five people you associate with the most, right? And then you two will get me here. If you're hanging around in certain crowds, you learn from them, you speak like them, you go to the same functions as them, and you absorb things. So you are the average of the five people you associate with most. I think that sort of saying is true, and starting with you, Lilo, like who are the type of people that you learn off when you hang around in the business case outside of, say, rugby?
Yeah, it's actually it's a nice question too, because I think as you get older, you start to understand your circles, right? You know, as being a father of four kids as well, I've got many different circles that I hang out with, because it's either my family side, my mates from rugby of old, you know, we're talking about old stories, or like you say, the business side of things, where I think I'd mentioned the last, say, 2 years of my career, you know, being asked to go up in the boxes and stuff, people, is when I started actually meeting business people, you know, who weren't rugby, they had no rugby background, they were just corporates. And I was lucky enough, say, two or three guys I got to know really well from that experience. So they become my circle of business friends who, yeah, don't get me wrong, man. These guys are still cool. They still have a beer. They're still not formal every time you meet them and, you know, talk geek language. But they've got an amazing business head on them, you know. And when I was stuck in a rut and I had to find an answer for a question I really need to know, I'll sit down with them and say, bro, I've got a question. Can we meet for coffee and have a little chat about this? You know, maybe an investment or how the dynamics should change, or I'm making too much money. How do I now put this back into the business? So going back to your question, Aid, I think knowing what circles you've got in life, which I think we all know that, you know, and I think, as we always say in this specific kind of region, don't be scared of asking questions, man. And, you know, and you might be surprised sometimes that maybe some of your other boys who you didn't really expect to understand what business is, you kind of just mention it in conversation and they bring up a cool idea or something that you're just surprised that they actually brought up an idea and you're like, bro, where did you come up with that? Yeah. You know? So, you know, don't be afraid to talk about those things with the other circles sometimes, because, you know, as much as you look down on these people, sometimes these people have got some just basic answers, because you think, overthink things. Yep. And you kind of get technical and then you kind of lose your reality and where it should be. Where your mate to your circle of friends who you just drink with and have a good time with, sometimes those guys might have answers, you know? But that's how I've kind of experienced it.
Yeah, awesome. And Case, for yourself, like who are you learning from daily, and what do you find by hanging around with some of your business partners and so forth?
For me, it started from my parents. My mom is a developer in Samoa, and obviously, you know, sometimes the island way is kind of like not straightforward. And I just saw her, the way she dealt with people, her builders, the gardening, the landscaping. She was just so straightforward with them. And she always, maybe she didn't even know she was doing it, but she had a routine every morning. Before she goes out and then see what she's building, she'll spend an hour, 2 hours in her garden, just, you know, planting new plants and things like that. That kind of puts her in a, you know, being around in nature and that. And I think, you know, that's important for her. And then when she goes out, and obviously one thing I've learned from her is like, when she says she's going to do something, she's going to do it. So with the banks and everything, everyone that knows her in Samoa, she knows that if she says she's going to pay tomorrow, she'll pay tomorrow. If she goes to the bank and asks for money, they'll give it to her. It's just the way she handles herself, and dad is just there to obviously do the same thing. But my mom was just she's just a warrior when she comes to things that are actually straightforward, and I'm trying to take that from her and bring it into what I'm doing right now. And obviously, being in Paris and then in France, it's you know, if you can achieve anything in Paris, well, you can go a long way anywhere else, and anything that's attached to Paris. So I try and get around, like I said before I chat, that I know the Coste family, which they own most of the nightclubs and all the big restaurants in Paris. And same thing, you know, when the coronavirus hit in Paris, he cut 200 jobs in one day. Now, obviously they go into the chômage and things like that, but in terms of the way his mentality, he's so productive, and it's just like, okay, this needs to be done, bang, and he does it straight away. So that's what I've learned from these people. They, you know, like Lilo was saying, you know, they can have beer with them, go around in all the big clubs in Paris. But wow, when things need to be done, it's you got to be ready for it.
It's awesome. Let's dial it back to the start. Good question from Kevi. Excuse me. And also Galen backing it up. Interesting to know. So where do you start? And the place of a business plan and going about that. I reckon this is a really interesting subject because I've actually got my own thoughts on a business plan, but interested to hear from you guys about how you did it and how someone would look to take the first step if they thought this might be for them on hospitality. Lilo?
Yeah, bro. I think my first bar was touch and go. You know, it was, I had a basic plan. And I think, you know, that changed as days went on and evolved. But if you get your foundations right, I think let's talk about nitty gritty business. So we meet up, we've got a brand, okay, I've got an idea. I want to open a little bar. I found the location, I've done my branding, okay. So if you've got everything set up and you're looking and you've agreed with the landlord on a lease, right? Business. One thing I kind of learned, I think it was from another businessman who gave me some advice. He said, open two companies, bro. He said, one company is the company that owns the lease, right? It'll be the stronghold company that will look after the lease, right? And it'll be just there to be secure that if anything goes wrong, you still got the lease, because the lease is one of your strongest points in the business. You've then got your second company, which is your trading company, right? Your trading company then controls the trading of the business. Kind of the main reasons for between having the two is if something happens to your main trading company, right? Let's say you get sued or it goes bankrupt or something like that, right? Okay, you can afford to lose that company but not lose the lease. Yeah, the lease will still be there in your holding company. Okay, then you can open up maybe another company, right? Change the branding, change everything else. You know, yeah, You know, you went wrong. You know what? Yeah, okay, bro. I learned from that, but I've still got my lease. I've still got the complex. I can crack on. Okay, that's just a little tip, guys. If you wanted to go down there, just be kind of clever with that. And then going into, I guess, the basics of it is, I guess, just getting for bars especially. This is the way I kind of look at it. The venue itself. How many people can it hold? Right. And it's really important, because if I've got a bar with 20 people, right, I'm wasting my time, because you do the numbers, bro. There's 20 people at the bar. They're just buying one drink each. You know, you're kind of making enough. And I think I spoke about this last week or last time I spoke, really, where we work backwards, right? We kind of had a goal of money that we wanted to make, end goal, and then work backwards. So venue-wise, going back to numbers, in my head, when I open a bar, I need to have at least 200 people that fit legally in this bar, because you got to talk to fire, you got to talk to building regs, you got to talk to all these people to allow you to have 200 people at one time in your bar, right? So then, right, in my head, I've got a number, 200 people buying a drink at this time, and how much they're going to buy and what they're going to buy. You put scenarios in place, so, and it creates a kind of business plan, you know what I mean? And then you can work on times. If, like I said before, if they come in from 7 till 9, they're buying this, they're buying that, you kind of got a kind of a real estimated number that you're going to be making. And then you kind of know then afterwards what you're trying to make. And then you start to put some reality in the whole thing. And then you're not just plucking numbers out of the sky then. You know what I mean?
They did it across a week. So for somebody listening, so, okay, we're a bar, we're quiet Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it ramps up slightly Thursday. On Friday, our estimates of revenue are this. Saturday, boom, revenue's that. And then all of a sudden, multiply that by 52 weeks with ups and downs of seasons, and you've got a financial plan for the next year. Yes?
Yeah, 100%, bro. But again, don't kid yourself, man. You know your town. And if you know the shops that are dead on a Monday, don't think you're going to be busy. You know what I mean? You're going to be the same, you know? Don't get me wrong. You can prove people wrong and become busy, you know? But you've got to be realistic in the numbers. You know, surprise yourself. Don't go high. Stay, you know, as a starter, give a realistic number. But again, the bar side of things, guys, we know for a fact we got our certain nights. Our Friday and Saturday nights are our payday nights. We know it's our go-to nights. We're going to make money. We've got bookings. We've got people coming in. The bar's going to be full. So we know then that's our go-to on income for that week, you know? And then we pluck and we close Mondays because it's just dead, right? We actually close Monday and Tuesday throughout some of the year, and then we reopen again. And we just play it by seasonal, you know? Wednesday nights, we know it's a student night. We've got a bit of a theme going. So we know there's a niche there for Wednesday night. Thursday's a bit more of a kind of older crowd that come. They want wine and dine. And then we got our Friday and Saturdays. So the reason I'm talking about this, guys, is I kind of know the market of my area and what I want, the people I want to come to my bar. And that's how I've created my business plan, because I'm creating something that's real and I'm not just Googling shit that's not real, you know? Because Google doesn't tell you what your whole, you've lived in the area for so long. You're right. You know your own people, man. So you know, I think take your numbers off the reality of all that.
Yeah, nice. And Case, that's gold. That's gold, bro. Again, it's about knowing your environment. Case, for you were busy when you first started your restaurant in Paris. You're playing rugby, full-on professional. You've been around on a bike. You've chosen the location. In your mind, you know the brand. You're working out who your chef and your staff are going to be. How did you go about creating that business plan? Did you pay someone to help you, or how did that happen?
To be honest, we kind of, our business plan ended up not being accurate, but that's, you know, again, one thing that kind of held us strong was the was when we decided to change our concept. We knew what our concept was, and that was, our concept is seasonal food, and Mediterranean kind of type of food, fresh food, with a touch of Brazilian. And I knew it was good because obviously he had a name for himself, and obviously I was playing footy as well. So bringing that together, it kind of like created a nice launch to the business. But that's not enough. You know, you can ride that way, but you gotta have something more more stable and a strong foundation. So we knew who our market was. Our market was just, you know, middle class with, you know, better money to spend. That again, Friday and Saturday was our payday. Again, the alcohol was a big factor for us. It became more clearly as it went on. So at the start, we were doing so well because the chef won the Brazilian Master Chef over there, and in the same year we won the Michelin bib, which is not the star because we're too informal, but there's an award just below that, and so all that came together. But we knew that all of that's going to die off. But one thing that's going to keep us up there is the strength of who we're about, and about our customer experience, and obviously there's a lot of course in Paris there's a lot of strikes that are happening in Paris. One thing that we couldn't control was our window got cracked, and obviously, and those things, we lost a lot of business during that time. But with the business plan, Salida's right. You have to get your business right, get your numbers right, and we didn't get that right from the start. But fortunately, we had a strong foundation in terms of what we wanted and who we wanted the target, and obviously the location was the main thing. Yep. There are people passing by that street every single time, and so if you have waiters that can sell, you know it's great for the business.
Yeah, nice. And I think what I'm hearing is for the players out there, you have to have a business plan to start. Sometimes you have to justify to other people that you know what you're doing, like the bank, if you're loaning money, or for business partners. So you need to have that, and it's good to have that so you've got a blueprint that's clear in your mind. Mm-hmm. But also sort of what Casey's saying, and I know this, is that a business plan changes really quickly. Sometimes they're out of date by the time you've finished writing them, because it's a moving beast, businesses, but you've got to have some sort of starting point. I reckon that's really valuable, sort of what you're passing on there. Lilo, I just want you to ask you. Oh, sorry. Go.
Can I just add something about... So I went into a partnership, which is a very dangerous thing to do. It is a 50-50 partnership, which is, you know... It's not a good thing to do, because this is why your business plan, if you're going into a partnership, it has to be strong, because it's always one of you, not the majority ownership of the business. So it's always a 50-50. So if you have a solid business plan, then make sure that he sticks to the business plan, not like, okay, he's a chef. Most chefs are artists, they're not business people. Mm. So they like, oh, I want the best oven here, I want the best fridge here, and that, you know, that was the learning I got from going into this, is that what he had in the business plan in terms of the kitchen they wanted ended up costing us twice as much, because he wanted the fanciest kitchen that we could have in that little small space. So for all you boys out there, you either go in by yourself, obviously you make the decision having the right people around you, but if you go in the partnership, make sure that you guys agree on a pact, which is you're agreeing between you two that, okay, that, for example, if you wanted to open another coffee shop or another bar, it can't be 250 meters around, you know, little things like that. So that's very, very important, that the business plan is really strong, and make sure that you stick to it right from the start.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Lilo, can I just get you to answer this question pretty quickly that came in from Jesse, I think it was. I'm pretty sure I know what your answer will be, and it relates to what Casey just said around partnerships. It is, in the UK, you can't own a business if you haven't been there for 3 years, but they want to start now. How could they get around that? How could they get going now?
Yeah, bro, I'll be totally honest. I'm not too sure, because I've been here for 20 years, you know, and being that my career was 15 years worth, I'd never looked into that, you know. So Jesse, bro, I'm not too sure on the legalities in the UK. I could find out for you. My business guy will tell me the answer to that. But because most of my years was here playing rugby, I dived into business straight after that. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm
probably lies within partnerships, right? The answer, partnerships, but you'd also have to be like partnering with somebody who can start the company. But just like Casey was saying, be very careful. Okay. Be very careful. Yes. And make sure.
I missed that part. Yeah, I missed that part of the question. Sorry. Yeah, if you're going to partner with someone who is the UK resident, maybe is that right?
Yeah.
That's cool. Sorry. Yes. But I think we touched on this last time, right, guys? And I think I was pretty specific about it, about, mate, going into any partnership, you've got to have the black and white contract in front of you before you go any way forward into it. Because I said to you, we went, you know, in one business, we went 3 or 4 months into the business and things started changing, which wasn't to my liking. And it was, hey, bro, that's not what we didn't agree to that, you know? But it wasn't written down. So, you know, and not only till after we had that argument and many more, right, that we said, right, solicitor, Monday morning, you're sitting down, pen and paper. This is what's going down on pen and paper, right? And an important bit to touch on what Kay said was the job roles have got to be outlined 100%. Your job role as a director and his job role, his or her job role as a director, as a partner, and you have to keep to those. If Case is in charge of the kitchen, your partner's not coming in and telling him what to do because it's not part of the agreement and it's in black and white. And there's got to be, you know, there's got to be something in the contract that states if that line is crossed, then there's obviously a legal implication, you know. Yep. But yes, I wouldn't think that a problem would be if you were going to partnership with someone that's been in the UK, obviously, that long.
Yeah, nice. Mm. Yeah, nice. We're going to take some more. Now's your chance. We're going to start winding it down. And I'm probably just going to recap on a couple of things and a few notes from a PRP perspective when we've talked about entrepreneurial stuff. Then we're going to leave these guys to give us a bit of last points that they want to get across to the group. But I just want to encourage everyone, like what I'm hearing with Salilo and Casey is like you have to give it a crack. But entrepreneurship, like it's not an overnight success, right? You have to be prepared to fail. And you're probably not going to win on your first venture. You're not going to win all the time. And as long as you're prepared for that and have the emotional intelligence to know that that's possibly going to happen, it's going to put you in good stead, I think. And that's what I'm hearing. Lilo, you said you'd rather live in fear than live in regret. I think it's a really great point.
Yeah, you know, I think, look, coming from the culture and... I come from Tonga. I was brought up in Tonga. I spoke Tonga before English. I think coming from that environment, guys, we've learned so many qualities to life itself, to how we speak to people, to our manners, to all this, right? And then all of a sudden, I'm chucked in the UK in the middle of people, maybe, obviously, population of millions and millions of more what the islands are. And all of a sudden, you know, I've kind of, I don't know, I'm starting to see a lot more than what I've seen before. But what I've learned is I've become different as a person in a positive way because of who I am. As a Tongan boy, you know, people know me around town because I'm Tongan, I'm passionate, I'm polite. I've got the morals that my children have, which I pass on to my children. And I tend to think, look, we've got a head start, guys. You know what I mean? A lot of that is in us and it just needs to be brought out in the environment that you're in. You know, and by tagging this on to business, I think a lot of it, yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. A lot of meetings that I go to, people like me because I'm this kind of funny Kiwi Tongan boy who, you know, who takes the piss out of the boss and maybe, you know, or whatever. It breaks the ice a different way to what they're used to, you know. And that's coming from rugby banter. That's coming from tours, pre-seasons. That's what I've learned and that's what I've brought into business. And I think ultimately, guys, That's what we got as a weapon really going into business. You know, don't get me wrong, guys. You gotta have the basics right. And I said this last time of the business plan, your budget, a good accountant. You know what I mean? A good solicitor. You gotta have those fundamentals right. And Casey's touched on it. You gotta have people who are doing the jobs that you need them to do, doing the right things. You become a really good facilitator, you know, just as you would. And I love his comparison of the bus, bro. And it's 100%, you know, the boys at the back of the seat, you know, you know, everyone sits on the bus and you're just an organizer of that company to make sure that everyone is happy inside that bus, you know. But I think, guys, I think to answer, going back to answer your question, I think, yeah, the culture that we have and that's in bred in us is, in my eyes, what's helped me along the journeys I've had through business.
You're awesome, brother. And some final words of advice from you, Casey?
Do you know, I'm thankful for, obviously, my parents. The upbringing, like Selena touched on, and everything like that. But I always told myself that, because some of us as Islanders, when we make it in rugby, that was the destination. And I always told myself, you know, I'm gonna do my best in what I'm, you know, in rugby, and it's a great achievement. But there's a point in when I was playing that it was only a stepping stone to what was going to come after that. And let's not forget that we still have another 30, 40 years to live after play rugby, if you keep yourself fed and, you know, in God's hands. But the thing is that I just had this mentality, this mindset that, you know, I'm just going to keep swinging. I'm just going to, you know, picture myself 10 years from now and look back and see the things that I have achieved, and if something that I was passionate about, like what I'm doing right now, you know, why not go for it? Because if you're not passionate about it, honestly, there are nights, you know, less, people will say, you know, if this was easy, anyone can do this, but it's not easy. But the one thing, like Selena was touched on, that is those regrets, not having a goal. But how many times in our lifetime we say, we should have done that cafe 5 years ago. Well, how many times we say that? Like, I got to the point, I got sick of saying that to myself, and just like, okay, there was a switch that went off, and I said what I was going to do, and you know, and just go for it, boys. But you got to be passionate about it, because you're going to have a lot of sleepless nights. that's for sure. You're going to be worrying about paying your staff, looking after them, because that's how us Islanders is, that we care too much about people. And so, you know, if you have a passion, just go for it, and use your context that you're making rugby now. Remember, we have a head start because of the platform that we're in. Use those platform. I know when we get to those after matches, we like to stand in the corner and not go out there and make contacts. You know, get out there, just be yourself, just say hello, and just talk normally, and just keep making contacts. And sooner or later, you'll find the right people that you can put on your bus. And once the right people on your bus, they have to be in the right seat. And honestly, your journey into your passion will become a lot clearer and you know, for somehow, you know, a lot easier than you trying to do it yourself.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful advice. I think that's fantastic. And just thinking about getting started and some questions about getting started. From a personal development point of view, you can always go and do some work experience and just get in the mix of a small startup. If you saw a Salilo or Casey there, you're busy with your rugby, you have time off, like, go and throw yourself in there for free. Do an internship or just work there and learn the hustle, learn how things are done, how people are making deals, and just learn and absorb it. Is one way to get started, which will give yourself confidence and some extra tools to take that and go somewhere else and do your own venture.
Can I just touch on that, bro? And I think that's really important, guys, because that's our culture. And I think one of the things that maybe my staff kind of respect me for, right, is I always say to them, never disrespect the mop, right? I'll be the first to grab the mop. I walk in that club and if somebody needs mopping, I'll mop it, right? And they see the boss mopping up, bro. They know that respect is, nothing's ever too big, you know, for the company or for the people in that company, you know? So don't ever get too big for yourself. That's one thing, guys, please, because I think you'll be quickly told in life that you'll become a cock, you know what I mean? And you got too big for yourself. And honestly, the other thing is, bro, honestly, as we are as people and culture, you always speak to the cleaners. You always speak to, you know, do never judge your staff on their level of employment. You know what I mean? I sit down and speak to my cleaners once a week and say, bro, how's your week going, man? oh, what's your dad up to? I think, is he all right now? And, you know, that's maybe the Tongan or the Kiwiness in me. But they, honestly, you forget that goes a long way with people. That cleaner goes home and goes, I just spoke to the boss. He asked me about you, Dad, you know? And I think a lot of, again, I'm talking about the UK. A lot of the UK kind of totally missed that. You know what I mean? And guys, they haven't been brought up the way we have, you know? And I think, please don't ever forget that.
Awesome, bro. Awesome. Hey, on behalf of all of us online, on behalf of Pacific Rugby Players, I just want to thank you both for your time. It's been great chat. Love talking entrepreneurial, everything about business. And I'm sure everybody's taken some really good advice, gold. I've seen people taking notes. So thank you for passing on your words of wisdom. And no doubt we might be in touch. If anybody's got any questions, we can always try and find a way to get to these two men. See if we can help you out.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for
Thank you. Thanks for everybody jumping online. See you all next week with our next workshops.
Awesome. Cheers, brothers.
Thanks for joining us on today's show. Check out PacificRugbyPlayers.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter to stay on top of all news relating to Pacific Rugby Players and to find out when we drop our next episode of PRP Radio.